Lemonada.
This is Eric Alvarez. One quick note before we begin. This episode is available in Spanish. You are listening to the English version, which means I will try to say soccer instead of football. Para escucharlo en español, busca el podcast Mi Mundialista Favorita.
For Becky Sauerbrunn, there are two types of leaders.
I think that there are ceiling raisers and there are floor raisers. I think I'm a floor raiser. And I think by grabbing as many people as I can and elevating that floor, the ceiling won't be as high and there's more opportunity for those people to reach that ceiling.
Becky is a two-time World Cup champion, Olympic gold and bronze medalist, and four-time NWSL Defender of the Year. At 38, she's a veteran and captain of both the women's national team and the National Women's Soccer League's Portland Thorns FC.
As a defender, Becky sees everything. Off the pitch, it's no different. Becky is always looking at the big picture. Both players and leaders of the Players Association describe her as their moral compass. When Becky talks, everyone listens. I'm Eric Alvarez, and I'm joined by my decorated football co-host. She's an Olympian who won the World Cup with the U.S. Women's National Team, and now plays as a defender for the NWSL champion Portland Thorns, Megan Klingenberg.
Thank you, Eric. This is my new favorite Futbolista, where you will get to know football's brightest stars and the causes they're fighting for off the pitch.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Oh, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Now, Megan, you said previously in an interview you did with Becky on the Men in Blazers podcast that the defense as a whole is a unit in a unit that requires a lot of communication. So what makes Becky such an effective communicator on the field?
Becky is a constant stream of information. She is always giving information about players around you, where they're moving, how you should move, what's on your shoulder. She's just making sure that you have all of the pieces to be successful, and she does it in a way that is not alarming.
But what about her communication off the field, and how do other players look to her for guidance after the final whistle?
Becky's really introverted, so she's not the type of person that is going to seek you out and tell you what you did right and what you did wrong. Players usually have to come to her, but when they do come to her, she's honest. She's passionate, but she's also compassionate. She'll give them the information that they need while also holding space for mistakes happen.
We asked Layla Rahimi, a sports anchor and reporter for NBC Chicago, to introduce us to your new favorite futbolista, soccer's defensive rock and Midwest native Becky Sauerbrunn.
In 2020, Becky Sauerbrunn was honored, having the soccer field at her Missouri high school named after her. Here she is speaking to NBC affiliate KSDK at the time.
How does this compare to your other honors, World Cup and gold medals and
I mean, it compares. It absolutely compares. Because when you bring it all back, like why you do the things that you do, why I keep playing soccer, it's because of the joy.
It's here where her soccer career took off, but it's also here where she began to notice women athletes weren't being treated equal.
Going to the men's soccer game as opposed to the women's soccer game. And why were there more people at the men's game and not the women's game? And then you go to a football match and our team was terrible. And yet there were so many people there. Mm-hmm. And we had these women's teams that our basketball team, super good, but like people weren't showing up for our games. And I was like, why is this? I don't understand this. And I didn't know how to phrase it or put any meaning behind it, but it was noticeable. You're almost confused, or you feel like you've been brainwashed at a young age to think, oh, this is just normal.
Becky began talking to other female soccer players about the issues, learning about lockouts, boycotts, and other moments where women were using their voices. She realized what she would have to do.
Hearing all these inequities and the nonchalance from the Federation over how we can correct those things, and even to be more collaborative and think outside the box in order to address some of these issues, it was so stagnant. And that's when I first realized, like, oh, we're gonna have to utilize our platform, we're gonna have to utilize public support, sponsors, like all these things that can help apply pressure and give the players a little bit more leverage.
In 2016, Becky, along with her teammates Hope Solo, Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, and Megan Rapinoe, filed a wage discrimination complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the federal agency that enforces workplace discrimination laws. The team cited the fact that the women's national team makes as little as 40% of the men's team, in spite of exceeding revenue projections by $16 million in 2015. This came after a World Cup victory and back-to-back Olympic gold medals.
I would say the EEOC complaint, filing the EEOC complaint, was the moment where I was most like, oh my goodness, this is incredible. I'm incredibly proud of you. And on top of that, like, you're such a badass.
That's Zola Short, Becky's partner of 18 years. He said the decision involved a lot of thought and preparation.
Of course, there's absolutely nerves. But I think that there's also this kind of like process for her where she steels herself, you know, and, you know, finds the resolve to continue moving forward because she knows she's going to eventually be on the right side of history when it comes to some of these decisions and some of the stances she's taking.
28 members of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team filing a gender discrimination lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation.
In 2019, frustrated with a lack of progress, she and 27 players withdrew the initial complaint and filed a gender discrimination lawsuit against U.S. Soccer after winning the World Cup in France. The movement quickly gained support from fans. On their victory tour in New York, fans chanted equal pay at the Federation president, Carlos Cordero. In March of 2020, Becky was named president of the Players Association. A few days later,
U.S. Soccer says women should not get paid as much as men. The U.S. Soccer Federation argues it's not violating the Equal Pay Act since the job of the men's national team, quote, carries more responsibility.
The U.S. Soccer Federation filed a document claiming that women, quote, do not perform equal work requiring equal skill and effort, end quote. The comments sparked an immediate backlash and prompted the president of the federation to resign and fire its lawyers. Still, a federal judge dismissed the team's key claims a couple months later. The lawsuit was finally settled in 2022, awarding $22 million to the players in the case and an additional $2 million into an account to benefit U.S. Women's National Team players in their post-career goals and charitable efforts related to women's and girls' soccer. The settlement also includes a promise to equalize pay among men's and women's teams in all competitions, including the World Cup.
It felt really, really good to sign it on that night in front of everybody and to be able to like thank the people that really helped us along the way, including that original group of women. Mm-hmm. I feel very honored that I got to put my name on that piece of paper.
Yeah, put your hands together! It is official!
Fortunate to be given a platform where for some reason people listen to me sometimes when I talk. And I think what comes with that is a responsibility to use it wisely. And for me, it would be a disservice to myself and to a lot of disenfranchised or marginalized people to not use my voice when I have the ability to.
Now, Megan, you played with Becky in the 2016 Olympics right after she and others filed the wage discrimination complaint with the EEOC. And you were elected to be one of the player representatives in contract negotiations with her and Kristen Press the following year. I'd imagine you all grew a lot through that whole process. What have you learned through that process that can be applied to other contexts?
Yes, we grew a lot. Going into it, I had certain ideas of what I thought it would be about, how we would come together and would be kumbaya, and everybody would just be like, yes, you're so right. There has been discrimination for a very long time and we should fix it. And it was not like that whatsoever. It was a fight and it's always been a fight. But what we learned is that when we come together and use our collective voices, it's so much stronger than a singular voice out in the void. When we use our power together and stand strong and support each other, we're able to get so much more done than if it's just a single person going at it alone.
After this break, Layla Rahimi will...
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And... listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
We'll explore how Becky is raising her voice for the LGBTQ+ community.
In February of this year, Becky wrote an op-ed for a newspaper in her home state of Missouri, condemning legislation in the state that would ban transgender girls from participating on school sports teams matching their gender identity. This new bill, called the Save Women Sports Act, would also strip public K-12 schools and colleges of state funding for allowing transgender girls to play sports with other girls.
You are not qualified to play in a female sport. You're bigger, stronger, and faster. And the strides that women have made, the accomplishments that women have made in the last 50 years since Title IX, I mean, we certainly should not have to start giving that up because of feelings.
That was Holly Thompson Redder speaking to KSDK in March. Thompson Redder co-sponsored the bill, which passed Missouri's Republican-led House in April. So far, at least 21 states across the country have passed similar trans sports bans, and a federal bill applying to college athletes has even made it past the House of Representatives. This is House Majority Leader Steve Scalise in April.
And yet, it undermines the very fabric when you say a biological man can just play in a woman's sport if they choose to. It doesn't allow for that same ability for the competition that we've gotten so used to.
These arguments can start to sound eerily familiar to the U.S. Soccer Federation filing back in 2020, claiming that women don't deserve to be paid as much as men because they are biologically inferior.
I think we've been taught that that boys and men are inherently better than girls and women at sport from day one, and we know that the science just doesn't back that up.
That's Hudson Taylor, the founder of Athlete Ally, an organization that advocates for LGBTQ plus equality in sport and partnered with Becky on her statement.
One of the things that has been really insidious about the state that we're in is, you know, is the weaponization of gender equity against trans equity, right? This idea that you can't both support the expansion of opportunities, access, and resources for women and for cis women and girls in sports, while also supporting expansion of opportunities for trans women and girls in sport. And so I think Becky's just been a tremendous ally in having that courage to call that out, to be really precise with what the real threats to women and girls in sport are, and how so many of the folks who are passing or attempting to pass these laws are not actually interested in addressing the real problems that have been, you know, impacting women and girls in sports for decades.
Transgender youth is not a problem for women's sports. It's all these other things that we've not tackled. The abuse, the inequities, the investment, the lack of investment, the viewership, all these things.
In her op-ed, Becky wrote, quote, "If those putting forth this legislation actually listened to the needs and concerns of women in sports, they would outline clear steps to protect women and girls from the rampant sexual assault and harassment plaguing sports, issues we've been fighting in the NWSL. They would clarify what's being done to ensure all institutions in Missouri are Title IX compliant. They would outline a plan to promote equal pay for women athletes. They would ensure young women and girls have equitable resources in sport, especially women and girls of color. Instead, they're pushing kids away from the life-changing power of sports, forever depriving them of the invaluable lessons sport teaches and the best friends they would find on their teams," end quote.
So much of what I believe, like the truth just came out of me onto that op-ed, and what I believed and what I got from sports and how important it is for transgendered youth to also be given this opportunity to learn all these things that we talked about from sports, and just the sense of belonging to something and to creating these relationships, things that are so important and formative during those years.
When I was a young person, I found my family, my friends, and my community through playing sports, because as a gender nonconforming kid, I really felt like I didn't fit in off the court or the field. But once I was playing sports and I was a member of a team, I was loved and respected and valued because of what I contributed to the team.
That's Chris Mosier, a triathlete and duathlete from Chicago who became the first out transgender athlete to represent the United States in any sport in international competition in 2020.
I do have this really amazing, unique experience of being a female athlete for a long time, you know, achieving some level of success there and then transitioning to be a male athlete and having success in the men's category as well. What I've found in my experience is that so much of this transphobia in sport is directly related to sexism in sport, in that people don't take female athletes seriously. So we know there are so many well-documented benefits of playing sports, both mentally, physically, socially, and psychologically for young people. But I think what we also miss is that when we exclude trans people, we are othering them. We're telling them they don't belong, that they're not worthy of the same opportunities as their peers. And I think for the duration of a person's life, you know, to be excluded as a kid and be told that you're not allowed to play because of who you are as a child really sets that person up to feel like the world does not accept them, does not love them, that there's not a place for them.
In 2022, a survey across the U.S. and Canada found that 56% of transgender youth reported a previous suicide attempt, and 86% reported suicidal thoughts. Researchers also found that a sense of school belonging significantly protected students against suicidal thoughts. Here's Chris on the significance of having a straight cisgender ally with a platform as large as Becky's supporting the trans community.
From the trans community, it sort of feels like we've been neglected, like people aren't talking about this. And to have somebody, you know, who is so looked up to and so respected in the sports community, use her voice to advocate for inclusion was just really, really powerful.
Becky talks the talk and walks the walk. In the She Believes Cup in Florida this year, the women's national team wore white tape on their wrists to represent gender equality and white tape with the message Defend Trans Joy in response to recent legislation in Florida banning surgeries and hormone therapy treatments for minors diagnosed with gender dysphoria. On the other wrist, they wore purple for gender equity in support of their opponent, Canada, amidst their own pay dispute. It doesn't stretch the imagination to say that in the players' minds, gender and LGBTQ plus equality go hand in hand.
The pessimistic part of me worries that it's never going to be enough and I'm not doing enough. The optimistic side is, at least I'm trying. At least I'm putting myself out there and I'm giving the effort and the energy and the voice and sometimes the money to do what I can with what I have. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't think I'm doing it right, but I think the fact that I'm actually getting up there and doing something and standing up for something and for people, I do have a sense of pride about that.
So what's next for Becky? Apart from the World Cup, she's focused on using her platform for the next generation. This is her in St. Louis, right after the celebration of her 200th cap, which is soccer speak, for 200th international appearance.
Speaking to a lot of the young girls that came here, you know, they're playing the Cup teams in St. Louis, and they talk about how much an inspiration you are. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and, you know, what you see your role being for these young girls that are watching you on the biggest stage and saying, oh, that's what I want
to be? Yeah, I mean, it's an honor. And I was once one of those young girls watching this team, wanting to be on this team. And so my message to them is like, it's so possible. Like, anything is possible as long as you love the game and you get the support that you need.
The key phrase there is you get the support you need. Becky's still speaking out, sometimes quietly.
Luckily, I read this amazing book a few years ago called Quiet that's about introversion. Mm-hmm. Life-changing book. Yeah. And it really helped explain to me why I am the way that I am, but also any fears that I harbored about being a leader or using my platform explained it away for me, like got those fears to be less dominating in my mind. Because with so many extroverts, you need somebody who's kind of sitting back and listening and kind of trying to get all these threads to come together into a cohesive rope. And that's kind of my superpower.
This is Eric Alvarez, back here with my co-host, World Cup champion, Megan Klingenberg.
Megan, Becky is a veteran on the team now going into what would be her fourth World Cup. What can you tell us about the kind of player that she is?
I think that tells you everything about the type of player that she is. I went to one World Cup, and I feel incredibly proud of that. And it's an amazing accomplishment. There's something so incredibly wonderful and awe-inspiring about somebody that's able to do it four times. There are not many players in the world that are able to go to four different World Cups and be a huge part of the roster, a huge part of why they win, a huge part of the team culture. And that's Becky.
Yeah, I think it really points to that stabilizing force and that drive and that dedication over so many years. But off the field, Becky has been outspoken about a number of issues. What was your favorite part of her story?
That's so hard.
Hard why?
It's hard because I love Becky's story in its entirety. I love her story in its entirety because it's a journey without a destination. I think when Becky found her voice, it was the beginning of something wonderful and something that inspires other people to use theirs. Becky Sauerbrunn, I know her in her private life, and it's painful sometimes for her to use her voice because she doesn't like being the center of attention. She doesn't like being in the spotlight. And when she uses her voice, it's so powerful. It's extra powerful because you know that she's going against her own nature because she believes so strongly in what she's saying and how she's doing it.
On the next episode of My New Favorite Futbolista, the two Mexican-Americans representing Team USA
are grappling with their identity.
For a long time, like, I didn't feel Mexican enough, so I didn't like tap into that. And it wasn't until like, I feel like a couple years ago that I was like, no, like, I can still be Mexican and look white or whatever, you know?
Get to know Ashley Sanchez and Sofia Huerta on the next episode of My New Favorite Futbolista. Thank you for listening to My New Favorite Futbolista. There will be over 700 players at the World Cup, so we have more inspiring stories to tell. Go back to the My New Favorite Futbolista feed right now to hear previous episodes, and make sure to subscribe to get future episodes automatically downloaded to your device.
This episode of My New Favorite Futbolista was produced by NBC Universal Local. Megan Klingenberg and I, Eric Alvarez, were your hosts. Leila Rahimi was our guest correspondent. Megan McDonough wrote this episode. Michael Katowski was the editor. Jeremy Berg served as executive producer. Fernanda Hurtado and Seth Rubenroy were the supervising producers. Aaron Pinnell and Rosangela Payan were the motion graphics designers. Miguel Estrada, Brad Fossler, James Jeffrey, Michael Katowski, Erica Messick, Sanjesh Singh, Whitney Irie, Chelsea Turner, Amy Burns, Allison Stubb, Nate Fall, Matt Campbell, Mike Brown, Francesca Giano, and Brandon Galvan were the production crew. Stephen Dawson was the operations manager. Ray Rodriguez, Miguel Estrada, Rafael Virella, and Fernanda Hurtado provided translations.